Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to this minisode of Banging Book Club. This is the fortnightly podcast in which we talk about books, about sex and gender. My name's Lucy Moon.
I'm Lena Nobbs.
And I'm Hannah Witten.
Yay! That was incredibly smooth.
I almost talked over you then, Lena.
But you didn't.
I know.
I've always feel like I'm the middle one. I don't want us to get in the middle.
When I think of us as Powerpuff Girls, I think you're Buttercup, I'm Blossom.
Bubbles!
No, I'm Bubbles.
Which one? I don't know which one's
you're
which.
You're Buttercup and you're Blossom.
Which one's the leader?
The leader is Blossom. That's Han.
Totally fine with that.
And then you're like the rebellious one.
Shall we dress up as the Powerpuff Girls for Halloween?
Oh my god.
Done. We just need to make sure we're going to the same party.
Yeah.
Well, we are now. So we're awkward if we're at different parties.
Can I just say we are recording this in the morning. We had a Banging Book Club sleepover.
Super cute.
Yeah, we just went out for brunch.
We got an uncheeky Nando's. We were just serious about it.
Not for brunch, for last night. But and last night we watched the Virgin Suicides film because we just read the book. If you'd like to hear our podcast on the book, that was last fortnight's last time on the podcast. You can go listen to that. So let's talk about what we thought about the film. Maybe like a little bit of context. It was made in like 2002, directed by Sofia
Coppola.
It was
made in 1999.
Whoops.
Yeah, it was made in 99.
Good facts.
Sofia, what's her face?
Coppola. So
daughter of Francis Ford.
She's a woman in
our
her
friend
own
Sophia.
Right.
Yeah.
She directed it. Stars Kirsten Dunst. Danny DeVito's in it at one point.
Yeah.
Random.
Just people. What is our sound review?
Mine is ooh.
Yeah,
sound like
is
a really shit ghost. Like low-key Halloween shit.
Trying really hard. It's like, ooh, did
happy
I scare
shopper
you?
Ghost.
Mine is similar. Mine would be like,
yeah.
I'd be like, good looking. I don't know.
Yeah,
mine, like Jerry, like, this film looks really hot and nice. And like, it
I
looks
think
like
my
a good,
ooh was like, because it's like, oh, it's kind of like pretty and ethereal. Is that the right word?
Yeah. It's a good looking film.
That's exactly where my
I go up to it in a coffee shop. I don't know if I'd shag it.
That's the last question, Lena.
Sorry.
So what do we like about it?
I liked it's so much easier to say things you don't like.
Yeah, you've got to start
with
a nice.
So for me, I'm like, I was worried going into it. I don't know why, because it's one of my favourite books, but I've never watched the film, even though it's obviously been readily, like, available to me in the first world. Like, I have money, I have, like, technology, I could have watched it realistically, and I haven't. And I think because I was scared that they were going to fuck it up, and I don't think they did, like, I'm actually, like, really happy with it, and I can kind of see why it's a cult. See why it doesn't have mass appeal, and I can see why it's got a cult following.
I think one of the things I really liked about it is how much, to me, it reminded me of, like, 1980s John Hughes. Films, kind of like The Breakfast Club and other like kind of
like Ferris Bueller stuff.
Yeah, Ferris Bueller, like weird cult films like that where there's just a lot of like one-liners and stuff in it. But all of like the really good one-liners often are like picked direct from the dialogue in the books.
Mm. Yeah.
Book.
Yeah.
And it was so true to the plot.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
There was maybe like one or two things where like, it didn't quite happen that way. Probably skipped that, but in terms of like the series of events, it's like they someone read the book, drew a timeline of, like, these are all the events that happen. Okay, so this is what we have to hit. Here are some key, significant bits of dialogue. Throw those in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was, like, a very true adaptation. But
yeah,
we'll get on to things we didn't like about...
And aesthetically, it's beautiful. Really it's nice. Very...
Yeah. And a cool soundtrack as well.
Cool soundtrack. Mm. You can see that artists like Petra Collins were very influenced by the aesthetic. It's very pastely, very muted, very retro, like felt, vintagey.
Yeah, it felt really nostalgic, even though the time it was nostalgic for was like not that long ago after the film was made. And I think it's also really like heady and like claustrophobic, which is like how I felt about reading about that community.
Yeah.
It feels really like
The portrayal humid. Of an American suburbia was great.
Yeah, that old lady's house. The interior. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
One of the things that I found really interesting watching it, like the actual process of watching it last night with you guys, was when we were like, oh, that's not how I imagined that in my head when I was reading. Because like, Lucy, you didn't picture the Lisma girls as being blonde.
Oh yeah, I
and
was
in
like,
my head they were so blonde.
In my brain, the Lisbon girls are a bit Wednesday Addams-esque. Oh, like very, I pictured the whole book so dark because of these girls, like, the whole atmosphere of the winter and the autumn and spring is so dark, the house is falling apart. I imagine it like an oldish Victorian house and all these creepy girls inside. Mm. But they're so seductively creepy.
See, I pictured them as blonde because of the kind of, like, stereotype of, like, blondes being beautiful and men obsessing over them and them kind of, like, being mysterious. And then because they all die... It makes it more of a tragedy because they were blonde and pretty.
That's interesting. Yeah. I only think of rich people as blonde. When I'm imagining people, like, the only people that come out blonde are really, really rich.
I think they describe it in the book as fair. And I think fair is like a really, like you can interpret that however you want. Because a maiden is fair and it just means they're hot. Like, you know, it's hot.
But like innocent
bangable
hot.
Maiden, bare bangable maiden,
fair,
maiden
fair
in
maiden.
The next medieval village.
Come hither, fair maiden. And the other thing that I was just like, oh, that's not how I pictured it. The fence that Cecilia impales herself on was a metal fence. Mm. And I was like, in my head, it was wood. And she impales
herself. It's very, like, vampire-esque.
And she had, like, a wooden stake coming out through her chest. Which, actually, when I think about it, she might not have died if she jumped on a wooden fence.
Mm. Yeah.
She could have maybe survived that. But
whereas I pictured, in the darkness of it, this massively tall iron fence. Mm. So, like,
I picture
twice
like
to three
gate.
Times... Yes, like a school gate. Like, twice to three times the height of the fence in the film. And completely, like, she would have been pierced the whole way through and dangling.
Did
like,
you just kind of, like, what? How she is in the book? It's that in the film they've kind of made it a lot softer. There's lots of bits that are softer, I think.
Yeah. Although, I feel like the anticipation was... Like, there were moments where I was like, oh, this feels, like, really horror-esque. Because there are, like, some moments with the music and then... That weird, part where Cecilia's ghost is, or, like, people are having visions of Cecilia, like, and stuff. That was really scary. And then also, I think, because having read it, you anticipate things to happen. So when they were all at the party, and as soon as Cecilia's like, may I be excused, we were like, okay, she's going to jump out the window at any moment. And you know the moment that... everyone realises is the sound of her hitting the fence. And so I just remember sitting there being like, oh God, like waiting for this sound of like a child being impaled on a fence. But it was then really underwhelming, the actual sound. We were like, wait, was that it? Did we hear that?
Yeah.
It was very strange. But there were moments in it where I was just like scared. And like when the boys were in the cellar at the end, when he's like dancing around at it, just before you see Bonnie's legs hanging there. Mm. Like that was really creepy.
Yeah.
And then they run out and they run over and they trip over Mary's legs, whose head's in the oven.
Do you know what I think kind of held the film back a bit was the fact that it probably had to fit a PG to PG-13 rating.
Mm.
And really it should be a 15 because of the darkness of the content. But like, for example, we only saw legs hanging. Not that I wanted to see a hung girl, hanged
and
girl.
And all of the, like, the luxe sex scenes as well were very, like...
Just a rough and tumble with your jeans up.
Yeah.
You couldn't really see much. And, like, I don't know, maybe it could have been made, I don't know, like, more visceral in the way that the book is. If it had a higher rating.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And just stuff like, you're never going to see Mary's head in the oven or something. Mm. Like, and I feel like that's an important motif.
Do you think people are worried it will be instructive, though?
Yeah, maybe. Like, potentially.
Because I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, potentially.
But that's but then,
you know. Can you avoid that when it's a book, when it's a film all about suicide?
No. You can avoid it by not showing it.
Yeah, but then
like showing. But actually are you how seeing, they do
you're
it?
Showing the real like the like actual truth of the.
The thing it, the thing about it is he describes in the book in detail how each one of them dies, and I think that is a characteristic part of it. Is they, I don't want to like. Yeah, I thought they did Cecilia's attempt really, really well because that wasn't too graphic. Like, I don't want it to be too graphic, but I feel like it's it's really the shocking nature of seeing a young girl trying to die is quite important. But then maybe I just watching darker shit. Like, but that's
but
why.
You think maybe if it had been made today, it would be a little bit darker because I think we're used to seeing more like that on the screens now.
But that's also true. The tone of the whole film itself wasn't that dark considering the subject matter. So like one of the things that we were talking about last night, like kind of immediately after we watched it, we were like, that wasn't very sad. You didn't get any sense of the Lisbon girls being depressed and being isolated and being lonely. Like in the book, there's so much that goes into like the Lisbon girls' sadness and trying to understand where they are, and they just seem so happy in the film, and so then all of the other four suicides come as a complete surprise, whereas like in the book you're like, oh, they're really depressed and this is really sad, and like the abuse that's going on in the home is really understated, and you're like, oh, Mrs. Lisbon's not so bad,
she just wants the best for them.
But as a like, as a viewer, as an audience, when you're watching that film, I can't imagine having watched that without reading the book and that ending making sense. Been like, what's the point? Like, why do they die?
Yeah.
There's no reason for them to die.
Also, the film is an hour and a half. It's a really short film.
Yeah.
As the, you know, in terms of how the length of the average film nowadays. And so it's really fast-paced and feels quite rushed, so you don't really get a sense of that. One thing I did like, though, is that even though, like, when the boys are, like, far away from them in the book, they get, like, they look at how sad the Lisbon girls are, but one of the things we mentioned is as soon as they actually interact with them, they're like, oh, they're really normal. And I think they did that really well.
Yeah.
It's like actually when the Lisbon girls were at the party or when they were in the car going to the dance, they did like teenage girls being normal very well. Just like chatting, very confident. Like, so, but they didn't juxtapose that with.
Like the deeper aspect of. Them.
Like the suffering. Yeah.
But I can see from this film now why people think that the story is like or like making women into symbols. Do you know what I mean? Like a lot
and
of the
also glorifying
that people
suicide
are saying about
potentially.
The book, I'm like, the book is 100% not that. I think the book is very self-conscious and criticizing that aspect of it. But again, to this extent, like the director is female, so at what point can I, you know, I don't want to say like it's all from, you know, she's objectifying women, because I don't think she is.
It's a very simplistic version of the story.
I think
that's why
I think the book and the film are like serving two different purposes. So and it's just really strange to me how a film that is such a true adaptation in terms of plot and dialogue can be such I don't want to say wrong, but
it's so far away from
the
tone of the book.
It's not the same.
Yeah. And it doesn't portray I don't know. It just doesn't portray why they died.
Yeah.
There's no...
Yeah, I think it's so focused on being zany that I think it probably misses the
quite
importance.
Yeah, it's
so Lux is wearing, like, she's wearing that nice dress, and then they pan down to her pants, and you get a flash of the fact that she's wearing underwear that says
that
trip on it.
That was such a weird stylistic thing.
Yeah, and also, like, there was, like a cartoon glint in her teeth at one point.
Oh, yeah.
And it got really...
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Like, absurdist and zany, which is like a cool aspect of like how it looks visually. But it's also like, I think it was more about that than it was about.
Also, I thought it was kind of strange how they only showed interviews with Trip Fontaine when he was like an adult. So there's all of the interviews in the book that they do with all of the townspeople later on. But I'm like, why in the film did they choose to keep that in? But what was the choice in only keeping one of the characters? Like, what's the significance of Trip to keep him in the film?
Because he's hot.
Well, they kept...
The adult, not the child.
One or two at the beginning. But you're right, like, in general, the actual character interviews.
It was just Trip.
Yeah.
But he says the weirdest stuff, I think. He just says... He said the weirdest stuff.
They cut out a bit... She cut out a bit of, you know, when he leaves her on the lawn, on the football pitch... He says in the book he feels repulsed by her, and they left that out, and I thought that was really interesting because the whole sentiment's there, but I think that bit's the real bit where you're like, Trip is a disgusting human being.
Yeah,
and that wasn't there. Don't know. He was just like, I really just couldn't be with her that night. It's like, no, he was like,
yeah,
physically didn't want to be anywhere near her, just thought she was gross.
Yeah, and that's the whole aspect of the whole title of The Virgin Suicides. Yeah. Like, once he's, well, it probably wasn't her virginity, but like, he's, like, used her.
Yeah.
Then she's no longer the virgin, and he doesn't care.
Ugh. Ew, nasty.
What would a remake look like? What would a perfect remake look like in our eyes?
Much darker. It could be, I would want it on a series on Netflix, so there's more time to, like,
explore
it. I don't
know if it needs a series. I reckon it can still be done in one film, but I'm imagining something, like, Black Mirror-esque.
Like,
really quite dark.
That's creepy, yeah. Whereas mine would be, like, visually and tonally. Do I mean that? Like, way darker, but not necessarily in terms of, like, Black Mirror's quite dark. Like, well, Black Mirror
I
takes
think it's
it
because
another level.
If you're going to make a remake, you have to do a remake for a reason. It has to be different to the original film. And, you know, there has to be a purpose behind it. So we have this really kind of culty, zany, ethereal, visually exciting 1999 version of The Virgin Suicides. You make one in 2017, 2018, I want to see one that is dark. I just want to see something that's different. That's the thing.
Dark, like, but also cultier. There was nothing culty in it. And I thought that was a really, like, the witchiness of
By
the
cult,
girls.
I meant, like, a cult film, not, like, culty in terms of the characters and plot,
It would be cool if it was directed by the guy, the person who, is it a guy? I think it's a guy, who directed Fleabag, or did she direct it herself?
I don't know, she wrote it.
Of choppy, like, Fleabag is very dark, and the visuals of it, I think, are, like, quite dark, but it's still fast and sharp and witty and I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that'd be really cool. I woke up in the morning trying to think of like good soundtracks for a remake, and I really wanted it to have like 1975 in it. That's quite nostalgic, and like Lana Del Rey.
Lana Del Rey would have fit into the 99 one.
Yeah.
That would have fit into the 99 one with that. If she was making music then.
Yeah, you can still have that kind of a soundtrack and have. Like, I think it should be a very pretty film in terms of, I think, the art direction of it or whatever, or cinematography should be very, very thought out because it is in the book, and also it's all about appearances in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I would want to kind of, like, make more of the creepiness of the boys.
So they were
so innocent. They were really innocent. It was just like, oh, these curious little boys who are like, oh, what's it like to be a teenage girl? We don't understand teenage girls. Oh, let's get our binoculars out. It was really weird. And you kind of get a sense of like the exhibits and the things that they've kept. But I want it to be more creepy. And also it was the narrator was slightly more personal because there are four boys that you follow around. So you're like, the narrator is one of those boys.
Yeah.
Whereas... in the book, it's like, no idea.
It's almost like Lemony Snicket. I'd like it more Lemony Snicket.
Ooh.
Like that kind of, almost a little bit cartoony, so it's a little bit removed from reality, but it's still like not on the level of the adaptations of Lemony Snicket, that's really removed from reality, but in the book sense.
Because the author of the books is very much like, involved in the character's story and is collecting evidence and stuff.
Yeah. I like that.
But I want it to be creepy.
Yeah.
I want a sense of, I don't know, I kind of like, yeah, I wanted more of a sense of the narrator in the present as they were narrating.
Yeah.
And how, more of that so you can like really see like actually how messed up that the boy's obsession.
Yeah, because it's a very emotional obsession, isn't it?
Yeah. I did like at the end, though, in the film, they had the boys, like, all stood on the street. And it was just like, oh, we loved them. Like, we loved the Lisbon girls. They'll never know that we loved them.
That was kind of warming, I guess.
No, like, that's meant to be the creepiest.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's why I find it creepy, because it's like, it shows their naivety.
Mm.
Like, you didn't love them. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing.
Yeah, I want that bit to be super creepy, the bit at the end where they're like... they're so selfish. Like, they'll never know how much we love them and we care for them.
Yeah, that's true. The actual whole passage is more like that. I think as well there's a part at the end of the book that talks about how it wasn't just one thing that killed them. It wasn't one thing that made them. You know, it's all these bullets and we're never going to know. And some of it was, like, pressure from the outside. Some of it was their mum. Some of it was, you know, and it's like, there's never actually one simple reason. But if you've got enough bullets in the gun, you don't know which one's going to...
Yeah. And that wasn't even... that couldn't be conveyed because there were no bullets in this film.
Do you think if it was released now, we'd get a lot of Guardian Communist Free articles and like people doing like, well, we shouldn't show this, you know, which I get frustrated about, to be honest.
No, I don't think it would be that much because it's a classic book.
Because it's so classic.
Yeah, it's not like someone wrote it recently, although it is a new adaptation.
There's always going to be a think piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is the world we live in. But I don't know.
I did love at the beginning that before the title sequence was Cecilia's line, like, well, obviously, Doctor, you've never been a 13-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Title sequence. I was like, yes, this is the correct framing.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That was perfect.
Yeah. I'd also want it to be more cinematic. I don't think that enough was made of, like, the sprinklers and the light.
I liked the sprinklers.
Yeah, but they should be. It should be more obvious, I think.
Yeah, like, it wasn't the sound obvious about enough. Design, you can
everything
make it
was
more dramatic.
So subtle. Yeah, everything in that whole film was about subtlety.
Yeah. Also, like, if, like, there was, we were very much zoomed into their community. We didn't zoom out into all the issues that the book touches on, which is about, like, class and race and the kind of demise of the American dream and have everyone outside of their suburban bubble is, like, losing their jobs and, like, civilization's decaying.
Oh, also, it was set in Michigan, which just we didn't realise.
Yeah, we were trying to work out where it was set, weren't we? Yeah.
Well, the film's set in Michigan. I don't know if it's the same as the book, but we were like, oh, there we go, Michigan.
Because we were going to touch, we completely forgot to touch on... the race dynamic of the book in the podcast, but there is a small dynamic of...
You see them on the peripheries.
Yeah, because there's a lot of civil black rights. Characters that are talked about, but they're always in, like, service jobs, and, like, they're either, like, the help, or, you know, they're, like, the workers and stuff, and they're just kind of, like, there. But yeah, there are no black people in the film.
It's weird that it's a constant presence and it's referred to a lot, but in really negative ways.
Yeah. Like, it's like really passing negativity. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like...
real intense to us now. But, like, yeah, very odd.
I think when it comes to, like, literature, there's so much more room for all of that. Mm. So you can have, like, the story of the suicides, but then you also have, like, the grander narrative of, like, this town's demise. But then you also can include stuff about class and race. And I do feel like maybe it's harder to, like, do all of those things properly in a film.
Yeah, because they go unexplained in the film as well. You'd be like... because there were no black characters in this film. No one was white.
And if they were to copy, what the book says and just, like, have random black characters in the background in, like, these...
yeah, unexplained.
Unexplained, like, lower positions in society. Mm. That, like, is that more problematic than not having any at all? Like, going unexplained because you don't have the literature there to kind of, like, give you the context and give you... show that the author is, like, aware of what they're representing and kind of being like, this is a problem.
Yeah.
Because that's what the author's saying. Like, this isn't right. Like, this is, like, messed up the way that how American society is structured.
Mm.
But I feel like if you just, like, threw, like, black people in the background of a film...
yeah, sideshowing.
In those positions of work without that kind of literary explanation that you can get in a book. Mm. I don't know, like...
yeah, because...
unless you made a whole other film about race.
Mm. But, or like, unless you summarise...
I just think that this like, book-to-film adaptation is a key example of, like, why read the book when you can watch the film? Look at this. Yeah. Like, some stories need a book, you know?
Yeah,
you
this isn't Harry Potter.
This isn't Harry Potter. No. Although we could go into why that.
Right.
Yeah.
Quick discussion on female director. Do we think that was a big influence in what changed the gaze?
I don't know. Mm. And also, I don't know if it should make... like, it shouldn't make a difference whether a director is male or female. Like,
but it does.
I think it should, in terms of lived experience.
This story could have been way more exploited by a male director who was shit.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. Like, their bodies weren't zoomed in on in a male gazey kind of way. And there wasn't, like...
yeah.
You know, like, in music videos when you feel like it's, like, a male gaze of, like, what a man would be looking at on a woman.
Yeah, that's how...
there wasn't that. There wasn't all these, like, there wasn't too many, like, zooms in of their mouths.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, you know, like...
and the girls were so innocently made up, and they all looked incredibly young.
They weren't sexualised, or...
no, I was really surprised
even
at
Lux
how
wasn't,
unsexualised
like, massively sexualised, even though...
oh, Kirsten Dunst is just perfect casting, I think.
See, I don't know. I think for that film she was.
Yeah.
But I think... I just want them all to be a bit more, like, dark.
Yeah.
Like, the virgin side of it's almost ironic.
Yeah.
Like that. So, anyway. Yeah. Would you have sex with this film?
No. It's still about suicide. I can't have sex with it. Like, for the same reasons I wouldn't have sex with the book. Like...
yeah.
Mm.
Like, I can't...
I'd have sex with the art direction of this film.
Yeah, okay.
I'd ask this film to get therapy and then maybe we can go on a few dates.
Yeah, I feel that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Great, thanks so much for listening.
Yeah. Let us know if you watched the film and what you thought about it. We're at Banging Book Club on Twitter. Yeah.
Also, please leave us a review on iTunes if you like us. We'd really love that. And then give us a tweet at Banging Book Club. Give us a follow.
Yeah.
We love to interact with you, don't we, Hannah? Who
absolutely
runs the book club account almost exclusively.
I sometimes tweet from the Banging Book
Club. I just accidentally log in, favourite something. I'm like, oh, I'm on Banging Book Club.
Yeah.
And then I'm back on
and
my
then
own.
Out again.
Yeah.
This month we are reading Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski. Anyway, read along with us. That episode will be coming out on the 27th.
Yeah, we're going to be pro wankers by then.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to masturbate. So excited.
Yeah, thrilled. I feel like I'm going to sneeze.
Super excited.
Am I going to sneeze?
Decide now, Lucy.
Oh, fuck!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter.
Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.